It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Donald Trump barnstormed North Carolina today, visiting Fayetteville and Wilmington, where he veered off message and seemed to suggest that voters exercise their Second Amendment rights to prevent Hillary Clinton from packing the courts with liberal judges.
If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what. That will be a horrible day.
The Clinton campaign issued a statement saying, quote, "This is simple. What Trump is saying is dangerous. A person seeking to be the president of the United States should not suggest violence in any way." A Trump campaign statement said, quote, "It's called the power of unification. Second Amendment people have amazing spirit and are tremendously unified, which gives them great political power. And this year they will be voting in record numbers, and it won't be for Hillary Clinton. It will be for Donald Trump." Trump hit Clinton again for being more of the same.
Hillary Clinton is going to be 4 more years of Obama, but maybe worse. 4 more years of ISIS. 4 more years of high taxes.
But Trump's GOP support continues to fray. Susan Collins of Maine last night became the 6th Republican U.S. Senator to publicly declare Trump unworthy of being president. After yesterday's open letter from 50 GOP national security experts panned his candidacy, Trump kissed him off as disgruntled job applicants today.
I'm not going to hire these people. I don't want these people.
Trump maintains he'll make no stylistic nor substantive campaign changes to reassure GOP doubters.
I certainly don't think it's appropriate to start changing all of a sudden when you've been winning.
And when we reached out to the Secret Service and asked them about Trump's Second Amendment remarks, all they would say is that the Secret Service is aware of the comment. Customarily, by mission, they're required to investigate any verbal threats to a principal, a protectee.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. There you have Carl Kamen of Fox News piling on, which does not surprise me at all. Carl is, of course, making it seem as though Donald Trump wanted to assassinate Hillary Clinton. He didn't say that, but that's the tag itself. He checked with the Secret Service to see if they followed up with those comments, you know, because threats to the president. So threats to a potential candidate, through a candidate, potential president. So, you know, he's just piling on yesterday. The media was freaking out. In fact, they said things like, this is beyond the pale, even for Trump. Basically, he's saying, if I lose the election, go ahead and revolt, assassinate. He goes on to say, I could read all of them. What's the point? You know what I'm talking about. Here's the thing. I want you to hear Trump's full statement, because prior to the statement that they keep playing, he said something that I think kind of puts it in context. Now, listen, he is inarticulate as the day is long. There's no question about that. He's careless and inarticulate. But I think it's just really an absolutely ridiculous stretch to say he's calling for the assassination of Hillary Clinton. And I'll tell you why. Let's listen to the longer clip, which gives you context. It shows you what he said just prior to this. Let's listen.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick, her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day.
All right, so, you know, what did he mean? I tell you what I don't think he meant. I don't think he meant that they could kill Hillary Clinton. I think that's ridiculous. I do think he is tying that with her expressed willingness to revisit the Second Amendment in the Supreme Court, and the fact that she's going to appoint justices if she is the president, and there won't be anything anyone can do. And then he's talking about the Second Amendment, people that embrace the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. I don't know what that means, but I don't think it means he's calling for them to march out and kill Hillary. I think that's ridiculous. You know, this is what I've said this to you before, and sir, I've certainly lived it. The right-wing watch monitors this show every day, and they're one of the chief culprits in taking something that you say and putting a slight twist on it and then just going into a frenzy. And because I'm not as public a figure by a long shot as Donald Trump, you know, I get it occasionally, and then it gets whipped, and then people pick it up, and then I get my Twitter feed is filled with vile threats to me, you know, death threats and all sorts. That's just the way the game is played. But if you, you know, move higher up in the ranks of notoriety or not popularity, but your name is better known. And also, if you become more of a threat to the left, this is what they do. They put a slight twist on your words and then seek to destroy you over it. And that's what he's doing. They're doing over and over again with Donald Trump. And of course, he keeps giving them fodder because he's careless in his words. Last night, Donald Trump was on with Sean Hannity, and this is how he explained what he meant.
Nobody in that room thought anything other than what you just said. This is a political movement. This is a strong, powerful movement, the Second Amendment. You know, Hillary wants to take your guns away. She wants to leave you unprotected in your home. This is a tremendous political movement. The NRA, as you know, endorsed me. They're terrific people, Wayne and Chris and all of the people over there. And by the way, they've already, I just saw, they tweeted out, basically, they agree 100% with what I said. And there can be no other interpretation. Even reporters have told me. I mean, give me a break.
All right, so that's what his response to that was. Meanwhile, it seems to me the media ignore the important stories. You know, I mentioned this yesterday, too, because it has to be said. If I have to say it every day, then I will. Because we're talking about careless words from Donald Trump and sometimes some mean comments, for sure. I hated what he said to Senator Cruz and what he said about Senator Cruz and his father. We can't forget that or deny it. But we're talking about, with Hillary Clinton, actual deeds, actual things that have been dangerous, that have caused the loss of life, very poor decision-making. And so, to me, it's a matter of degree. And so that's what we have to talk about. In fact, I want to read to you an article that and we're going to put this on our Facebook page because I want you to see it. This is 26 pages that I printed out this morning. And this is the story. When Hillary Clinton was a young attorney, one of her first assignments back in Arkansas, was to defend a young girl. She was 12 years old. She was walking down a country road. She's 12 years old. And a man who's like 42 came by, asked her if she wanted to go for something to drink. She got into the car. He took her to a deserted area. Now listen, if you have kids listening, I'm not going to get too graphic, but still, you understand, you might not want them to hear this story. So he pulls her in his car. He asks her, well, she said, you know, he doesn't pull her. She gladly goes because she thinks she's going to get some sort of a treat. He's in there with another companion who's 15. They both rape her brutally. She's raped so badly that she has to have stitches. She never has been able to have children. And you may recall that in just a few years ago, there was a media outlet here in D.C. who published an audio tape of Hillary talking about this case, in which she laughs about how she got the rapist off. Let me just read to you a little bit from the Daily Mail's account. And by the way, could I say that the Daily Mail does better reporting than almost any American outlet I know of? It's just amazing to me. They are very detailed and thorough, 26 pages, like I said, on this alone. But I want you to hear it from their account because I think they do good reporting. Hillary Clinton is not for women and children, says Kathy Shelton, 54, who was 12 years old when she was raped by Thomas Alfred Taylor in Arkansas. Clinton was the rapist's defense lawyer, pleading him down to unlawful fondling of a minor. The 41-year-old drifter served less than a year in prison. The plea came after Clinton was able to block the admission of forensic evidence that linked her client to the crime. Kathy Shelton, now 54, says she's furious that Clinton has been portraying herself as a lifelong advocate of women and girls on the campaign trail. Clinton accused Shelton, this is when the girl is 12 years old, of seeking out older men. and she ordered her to undergo grueling court-ordered psychiatric examinations. The presidential candidate later laughed while discussing aspects of the case in a recently unearthed audio-taped interview from the 1980s. A child rape victim says she cannot forgive Hillary Clinton for defending her rapist in court 40 years ago. Kathy Shelton was just 12 years old. Now, four decades later, she has agreed to be named and pictured for the first time. And it goes on and on. It does go on and on, 24 pages. So I just want to read a couple of other phrases here. She accuses this 12-year-old girl. Does this sound familiar? This is what Hillary Clinton did with the women who accused her husband of raping and inappropriate sexual advances over and 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 over again. And so the ones who actually came forward and whose names became household names were disparaged. Remember that Hillary formed this bimbo brigade? And it was their job to destroy each and every one of them. Paula Jones was just trailer park trash. And they were getting ready to destroy Monica Lewinsky. I forgot what they were accusing her of, mental instability, something. Does that sound familiar? Because this is what Hillary did to this 12-year-old girl. And this is what Kathy Shelton says. I don't think Mrs. Clinton is for women or girls. I think she's lying. I think she says anything she can do to get into the campaign and win. If she was an advocate for women and children, she wouldn't have done that to me when I was 12 years old. In the audio tape that we were talking about, this was made in the 1980s. It was just revealed by the Free Beacon, which is out of Washington here. I think it's been less than a year ago. On the audio tape, Clinton indicated that she believed Taylor, her client, was guilty. It's the rapist. Saying that his ability to pass a lie detector test forever destroyed my faith in polygraphs. She also laughed while describing how she was able to get a world-famous New York City blood expert to question the admissibility of forensic evidence that was misplaced by the crime lab after it was tested. And it goes on and on and on. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is news. And that's interesting. And Kathy Shelton's story should be told for Hillary Clinton's part in that so many years ago, because honestly, what has changed? And that tells us something about her character then. And if she had changed, if she'd become a different person, was handling things differently now. And by the way, on the platform at the DNC, they were bragging about her service in the legal profession. Let's see. Surrogates repeatedly highlighted Clinton's year-long stint at the Children's Defense Fund after she graduated from law in 1973. I went to work for the Children's Defense Fund, going door-to-door in New Bedford, Massachusetts, on behalf of children with disabilities who were denied the chance to go to school. It became clear to me that simply caring is not enough. To drive real progress, you have to change both hearts and laws. This from the woman who, in the same time period, was coming after this 12-year-old girl who was really scarred for life in every single way. That, ladies and gentlemen, is news. And that's what the reporters will not tell you. Meanwhile, they report that Donald Trump is trying to, encouraging people to assassinate Hillary Clinton, which is an abject perversion, twisting of his careless words. So this is what we're dealing with. And by the way, let me get practical here, because I meant to mention this earlier, too. There's so much to tell you today. Paul Ryan won in his primary last night against Paul Nehlen. The final vote was 84-16%, which is very disappointing. I have to say that, people in their districts tend to get very blind about the people that represent them. He comes in, he talks to me, he visits with me in my store. I know him, I know his family, and they disconnect from what the people who they believe in are actually doing in Washington. I see it happen all over the place. But he's our guy. I know him. He's a nice guy. But what he does in Washington seems to have no effect on them. They don't understand what is actually happening here. So that's what happened in Wisconsin last night. Coming up next, the IRS had a sort of a day in court yesterday, and I think this you will find interesting. Please stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Wondering what the new school year could bring? Here's Tim Todd of Revival Fires International.
Are you tired of the way that things are in your school? Are you sick and tired of what the devil is doing in the lives of young people that are going to the keg beer parties, having sex outside of marriage, doing drugs, smoking pot? Are you tired of it? The Truth For Youth Bible is a spiritual weapon for you to win your friends to the Lord Jesus Christ. You will take a Bible to school and give it to somebody in school that's not serving God. God will bring in the harvest. The light shining in darkness is going to be you taking the Word of God and introducing your friends to the Lord Jesus Christ.
Help bring the message of the gospel to America's youth. To get your free Bible now during Truth For Youth Bible Week, order online at revivalfires.com. This is a simple and free way to make a difference for eternity.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us, "The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever." In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit." Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345. And our website is afafoundation.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. Maury Bogart of Granville, Michigan's been knitting hats for the homeless for more than 15 years. After hat number 8,000, he stopped counting. That's what he told our friends at television station WGN. His good deed made all the more remarkable because Maury Bogart is 91 years old, spends his days in hospice care. Maury has skin cancer, a mass on his kidney. But every day he sits up in bed, picks up those knitting needles, and stitch by stitch he makes another hat. Sort of like the Energizer Bunny of the yarn world. He keeps on knitting and knitting and knitting, knowing that come the blustery winds of winter, a stranger down on his luck will stay warm thanks to Maury's kindness. And what a lesson for the rest of us, from a man spending his final days doing good deeds for mankind. That's the story of Maury Bogart, a yarn definitely worth spinning. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I first learned about it from the same news reports that I think most people learned about this. I think it was on Friday. This is pretty straightforward. If, in fact, IRS personnel engaged in the kind of practices that have been reported on and were intentionally targeting conservative groups, then that's outrageous, and there's no place for it. They have to be held fully accountable because the IRS, as an independent agency, requires absolute integrity, and people have to have confidence that they're applying it in a nonpartisan way, applying the law in a nonpartisan way. And you should feel that way regardless of party. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, independent, or Republican. At some point, there are going to be Republican administrations. At some point, there are going to be Democratic ones. Either way, you don't want the IRS ever being perceived to be biased and anything less than neutral in terms of how they operate. So this is something that I think people are properly concerned about. The IG is conducting its investigation. And, you know, I am not going to comment on their specific findings prematurely, but I can tell you that if you've got the IRS operating in anything less than a neutral and nonpartisan way, then that is outrageous. It is contrary to our traditions, and people have to be held accountable, and it's got to be fixed. So we'll wait and see what exactly all the details and the facts are. But I've got no patience with it. I will not tolerate it, and we will make sure that we find out exactly what happened on this.
Well, let's see. That was May of 2013, and that was the president just outraged at what he had just heard about what the IRS was doing to conservative groups, to Tea Party groups, to patriot groups, denying them 501c3 status, harassing them, asking them for tapes, transcripts of speeches, passcodes, all the information, all their membership addresses, everything, harassing them unbelievably. The president was outraged. Heads will roll. People will be accountable. Well, what? Let's see. What? This is 2016. I wonder what's happened. Well, we're going to find out because Hans von Spakovsky joins us this morning. He's just written an article called "The IRS Just Admitted They Could Resume Targeting Conservatives." And I've asked him to join us this morning because this is important for all of us. Hans, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sandy.
You know, I need to say that you, as Hans is the senior legal counsel at Heritage Foundation, he's also the author of Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Votes at Risk. And he's written many other books beside that, but just wanted you to know who he is. Hans, since 3 years ago, what actually has happened? Have any heads rolled? Has anyone been held accountable like the president promised?
No, I was just shaking my head listening to him saying that because, of course, the administration has actually refused to do anything about it. The Justice Department, under both Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch, you know, refused to prosecute any of the individuals inside the IRS that were responsible for this. You know, the top person who was doing this and helped organize it, Lois Lerner, retired to collect her full pension from the federal government, and they didn't even enforce the contempt citation. Remember, the House of Representatives held her in contempt for refusing to answer their question. That was up to the Justice Department to enforce against her, and they even refused to do that. So from the governmental prosecution standpoint, basically, they did absolutely nothing.
And even to take it further, John Koskinen then is appointed to replace, to be the new head of the IRS, and he's, you know, he's going to clean things up, I guess that's what they were saying. And he is the one who then announces that Lois Lerner's email has, just they've all been lost. They're gone. We just don't know where they went. And it has been so obstreperous, I guess I should say, in congressional hearings that there's been talk of bringing contempt charges or impeachment charges against him. What's happened to punish him?
Well, absolutely nothing. Now, the reason I wrote an article and the reason we might finally get at least something out of the IRS is because, look, a number of the groups who were targeted, including True the Vote and Lynchpins of Liberty, you know, they filed a lawsuit not too long after we discovered this against the IRS. Unfortunately, in 2014, so we're now talking a while ago, a federal district court dismissed their lawsuit. And the reason the district court dismissed it basically is because he said, well, the issue was now moot. You know, the IRS has announced they're not going to do this anymore, and so there's no reason for a lawsuit. Well, what happened on Friday was, you know, True the Vote, thankfully, and Lynchpins of Liberty, they appealed that. And on Friday, the District of Columbia Federal Court of Appeals reinstated part of the suit. They reinstated the part of the suit where these organizations were trying to get, one, a declaratory judgment about what the IRS had done wrong, but most importantly, they were trying to get a permanent injunction that would basically bar the IRS from ever doing this again. And the court said, no, this case wasn't moot because, in fact, at the time of the lawsuit, the IRS still had not granted tax exemptions to at least two of the organizations. Plus, and this is what ought to scare people, is that the IRS had only announced that it was suspending what it had been doing until further notice. The court looked at that and said, well, that's no indication that they're not ever going to do that again. In fact, it's like saying to the victim of a violation, well, you're all right for now, but there may be another shoe falling.
And the implication, Hans, I know a lot of people listening are parts of these groups, patriot groups, Tea Party groups, True the Vote, whatever, probably some church groups. I mean, there were tons of groups on that list. But the dangerous precedent here is that this, if this is applied to groups and allowed to go unchecked, it could very easily apply to individuals too, could it not, under a different kind of precedent?
Yeah. And look, for those out there, and there have been many, particularly some members of Democratic members of the Senate and otherwise, who have said that, oh, there was nothing really going on wrong here, they ought to read this decision, because the court makes it very clear that, in fact, there was a blatant violation of the First Amendment going on. I mean, that's the wording of the court, and they said, look, there was no really factual dispute between the parties, because the IRS basically admitted what it did in court. You don't hear that kind of thing, you know, in the media. But basically, they didn't fight the plaintiffs, and they admitted to the court of what they had done. And the court said, this is a violation of the First Amendment, and this is not the kind of conduct that's allowed of a federal agency.
You know, let me read from what the court reported, according to your article. In their opinion that was written Friday, they said, claims about harassing, probing, and unconstitutional requests for additional information that required applicants to disclose, among other things, donor lists, direct and indirect communications with members of legislative bodies, internet passwords and usernames, copies of social media and other internet postings, and even the political and charitable activities of family members, were not moot. In other words, they never denied they did that. That's, and they've right. never said they're going to stop doing it.
Yeah, and even worse is that all of that information, which they were not entitled to get, which they shouldn't have asked for, it's all sitting in IRS files. And we really don't have any kind of assurance that this information isn't going to get leaked by IRS employees to liberal groups that might take advantage of it. Because why do we know that? Because it's happened before. The National Organization of Marriage had its confidential information leaked by people inside the IRS when NAM sued. The IRS eventually had to admit what they had done, and they agreed to pay NAM $50,000 in damages.
Yeah, it is really an unbelievable story, and it's the kind of thing that will likely only get worse, really, I think, if Hillary Clinton is elected, because this kind of abuse will be, you know, there was, Hans, help me remember, now this, remember during the Clinton years, wasn't there some, maybe it was FBI files, that they had illegally in the White House because they were checking on people and using information against them. And that's what this is what's different about America. It has been that we can express our political opinions about things and not be punished by the government for them. And that's where we're headed, Hans. I was just talking last week, I think, Mark Zuckerberg has been called before the IRS, I believe it was 9 times, and has just been giving, Facebook has just been giving dribs and drabs of information. And the point I made, which you well know, you and I could never do that. Are you kidding me? If you got in your mail that you were being personally audited, Hans, would you ignore it 9 times?
Well, you could. Of course not. That's what makes the IRS so dangerous, that they can break and ruin ordinary Americans who just don't have the resources to fight back against them when they're abusing their power.
Yeah. So this is the precedent, and that's why I realize that some people are in these groups, and that's of a huge concern, but it could get even worse. So, Hans, this court ruling and their blatant, you know, calling out the IRS and their agreement with at least a portion of this lawsuit, what exactly does that mean now? Are they going to be able to sue the IRS, or what's the next step?
Well, what the Court of Appeals did is they sent it back down to the district court. So basically, the lawsuit is reinstated, and obviously what the parties are going to do, the challengers to the IRS, is they're going to try to convince the district court judge to issue an order that would bar the IRS from ever engaging in this kind of behavior again, and no doubt they're going to ask for an order that tells the IRS you have to either destroy or give back to these organizations all of the information that you asked for and have stored in your records that you were not entitled to. And that's very, very important.
This was a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit, and you and I both know, but people might not remember, that this D.C. Circuit was the subject of a lot of conversation a few years ago when the president, as in Obama, wanted to increase the size of that court and add, I believe, three judges, because the D.C. District Court is the one that hears so much of the controversial issues that come up. They end up in D.C., and they make so many important decisions. So what do we know about the makeup of that court now, Hans, and who these three people were in this panel?
Well, the president added three liberal appointees to the court because he wanted them to be able to dominate the court, particularly when the entire court is hearing a case. The first time a case is before a court of appeals, it's not before the entire court. It's only before a three-judge panel. Three judges are usually randomly assigned. In this case, through the vote and others, boy, they lucked out. They got three of the good judges on the court, and in fact, the opinion was written by Judge David Santel, who is a great conservative. He's on senior status now, so that's, you know, semi-retirement, but fortunately, he was on the case. I mean, I'll tell you, I know the judges on the D.C. Circuit, he's one of the best judges on the Court of Appeals in Washington.
All right, so that's who they got. But if it should be appealed back, I don't know the process. You're an attorney, and you certainly do. It still could go back to the D.C. Circuit, couldn't it? And it could be heard by all of them, and then they'd be in trouble.
Yeah, what may happen is the government may decide to ask for what's called en banc review. In other words, they go to the entire Court of Appeals and say, we want you to review the decision of these three judges. And if that happens, well, then these Tea Party organizations could be in trouble because of the way that the president has basically tilted the D.C. Circuit.
Hans, just one last thing to ask you. You can't be partisan, and I'm not asking you to be partisan. But last night, Paul Ryan won a stunning victory over Paul Nellon in Wisconsin. He is the Speaker of the House, and would it be fair to say that the leadership of the House has done almost virtually nothing to really? They've held hearings, but have they really done anything to hold the IRS accountable for any of this?
No, you know, the chief way that the House of Representatives has to hold government agencies accountable is through, as you know, the budgeting process. That they have the power of the purse, and the way you hurt bureaucrats who are abusing the law, abusing their powers, is you withhold money from them. You know, you hurt them in their pocketbooks. They react things like that, and unfortunately, that hasn't really been done.
All right, just yet one more thing to be concerned about, but I guess we should be very grateful that at least some truth was spoken by this three-judge panel, and so for that, we will be grateful today. Hans von Spakovsky, Heritage Foundation. Hans, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure thing. See you, Sandy.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Hi, I'm Janet Mefford, and I'm excited to be coming to American Family Radio. My new show is called Janet Mefford Live. Beginning at noon Central, each weekday, I'll take a closer look at the news. With so much happening, racial protests, terror attacks, pending elections, it's important to know not only what is going on, but also what these things could mean for us and for our country. I hope you'll be able to join me for Janet Mefford Live, noon Central each weekday, beginning next Monday, here on American Family Radio.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. A local pastor stopped by my office, heavy-hearted about the collapse occurring all around us. As we sat down to commiserate, he asked what many are asking, so what can we do? It's becoming increasingly clear that Christians are on the losing end of a sexual revolution that is radically transforming the moral framework of our culture and putting Christianity in its crosshairs. Yet, in the Beatitudes, right after the Lord speaks of his followers being persecuted and reviled, he calls them to be salt and light. Being hated and persecuted doesn't exempt us from our call to be gritty and dark dispersing light. Being in the minority doesn't give us license to retreat and lick our wounds. Now more than ever, may you and I boldly and courageously share the hope and the truth of the gospel to a world that desperately needs it. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Like a bad penny, the clock boy has turned up again. Teenager Ahmed Mohammed became an international celebrity last year when he, his family, and other Islamic supremacists pulled off what can only be described as an act of political warfare in Irving, Texas. The incident was precipitated when young Ahmed brought to school a so-called invention, a clock that looked a lot like a timing device for a bomb. When he refused to answer questions about it from administrators and police, public safety protocols were followed, and predictably, he was briefly taken into custody and turned into a victim for Islamists and their leftist enablers who have targeted the mayor of Irving, Beth Van Dyne, for standing up to the Islamic supremacist agenda. Now the clock boy is suing the school district. The city of Irving must fight this political warfare, not capitulate to it. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know that right now we are doing everything we can to help Truth for Youth Bible Week. And certainly our kids need the truth. And when they do hear it, you know, their lives are changed, just like our lives were changed. People of all ages. You know, we're going to be airing a show that we did with Ray Comfort yesterday, pre-taping. He's done a new film. Where he evangelizes, he persuades atheists. It's just amazing. It really is just so powerful. And so one of the things that struck me was one of the people, most of them are young people, like college age, but one guy's in his 60s. It's never too late for truth to transform your life. But right now we're concentrating on our kids. And so the goal is to give away 60,000 Bibles. And the way this happens is that if there's a teenager in your life, in your home, someone who loves the Lord, has given their heart to Christ and changed their lives and doing their best in the culture they find themselves in to talk to others, this is the tool that they can use. It's a special Bible that's been prepared for them. It's a New Testament. It has cartoons, color comics. It's really hard-hitting, and it's just powerful, very effective. And if you would like to help with this, and you know a teen in your life or in your acquaintance that you think might be willing and good at, they don't have to be good at it, I guess, just willing, to give a Bible to a friend, you can visit revivalfires.com, revivalfires.com, or you can call 1-800-733-4737. That's 1-800-733-4737. And they will explain to you, you know, how best to do this and how you might be able to help. And so I would encourage you to do that. It's so often, again, I'll count myself in this category, we do so much talking about what we ought to do, but sometimes it's very refreshing and encouraging to our spirits if we actually do something. So why don't you call 800-733-4737 and see what you can do to help advance the cause of Christ, to bring truth to our young people with the Truth for Youth Bible Week. Well, last night, see, there was so much talk about Donald Trump and his speech in North Carolina and, you know, the allegation that somehow he was threatening Hillary Clinton, which I still view as ludicrous. So Mike Emanuel, in the last part of his report on Fox last night, mentioned something that I think is actually a lot more, has a lot more gravity. Let's listen.
The Clinton campaign is also dealing with the controversy last night in Kissimmee, Florida, near Orlando. The father of the gunman who killed 49 people at the Pulse Club showed up at her event and got prime seating as she paid tribute.
I know how many people, family members, loved ones, and friends are still grieving, and I want them to know that we will be with you. We will be with you as you rebuild your lives.
Adding insult to injury, Sadiq Mateen told reporters he was a guest.
I was invited by Democratic Party. I'm a member, so as a member, I get the invitation, so it's nothing particular about it.
Both the campaign and the Florida Democratic Party denied Mateen's claim. There are also concerns about the money race. In a memo obtained by Fox, Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook sounded the alarm with supporters after Donald Trump raised $80 million in July, writing, quote, "This was far more than anyone expected and should be a wake-up call to all Hillary supporters." The Clinton campaign is spending heavily, $13.6 million on advertising to reach a large audience watching the Olympics.
Where are the ties
they
made?
Have to work
These are
too.
Beautiful ties.
They are great ties.
The ties are made in where? China?
China.
Ties are made in China.
Okay, I'm back. The point is that Hillary Clinton was in Orlando doing this rally, and behind her, you know, they're very careful, they, meaning the operatives, the Democratic, the Republicans too, very careful of who stands behind their candidate. So standing behind Mrs. Clinton, just to the right, is Sadiq Mateen, the father of Omar Mateen, who killed 49 people in that Pulse nightclub in Orlando and injured 53 others. He's right there, and he's waving a sign, he's all happy. You know, that in itself is pretty amazing. His son has not been dead that long, but he's, you know, at a Clinton rally, and he's, I'm a Democrat. You heard him say that when Mike Emanuel's report, and I was invited to be here. All right, so many people are criticizing the Democrats because they're alleging that a Mateen was invited. I don't know. That would be a little silly to, if they fully understood who he was, to have them standing behind her. I think the more damning thing is that Sadiq Mateen, who is a supporter of the Taliban, who is an Islamist himself, is a strong supporter of Hillary Clinton. That is something I think we might want to be concerned about. Mark Thiessen was on last night on Fox, and this is how he described it.
Hillary Clinton is the one who said she's promised us she can vet Syrian refugees for terrorist ties, but she can't vet the people coming into her own rally. How is she going to vet Syrian refugees? This is the father of a terrorist who killed 49 people in Orlando just an hour away from that rally. And, you know, the Clinton campaign says that he wasn't invited. Mr. Mateen disagrees. He said in that interview with a local reporter, quote, "I was invited by the Democratic Party. I'm a member." He's on their email invite list. So, you know, it's a little bit, and he wasn't just one guy in the crowd. He was sitting there right behind Hillary Clinton. I mean, he was a prop used by the Democratic Party for this event. So apparently it's not just the emails that she's extremely careless with. It's also her rally.
Yes, and I agree with him. And so, I mean, Mark is not saying that they specifically picked up the phone and called the father of the shooter in Orlando. It's that they didn't even pay attention. They knew he was, Muslim, and he was going to be sitting right behind her, and that was a good optic. Wasn't such a good optic. But the most important thing to me is that he supports her. He supports her. He's enthused. He's excited. Wonder why. You wonder why. That's not as big a story as Donald Trump carelessly talking about the Second Amendment. This one's not so big, such a big deal, right? So this is the way it's going. Now, I have a couple of other important stories that are not related that I want to tell you. Michael Ledeen, of course, you hear him frequently on the show. He's an expert in Iran, and he has a really stunning piece that he wrote just yesterday, and it's entitled, "Why Was Our Iranian Spy Killed by the Mullahs?" Remember the story I told a couple of days ago about this Iranian nuclear scientist who was hung. He had been here, we think, helping us, but it's all very quite unclear. And then he went back to Iran and they hung him. And this is what Michael says. "I never cease to be amazed at the certainty of our intellectuals about things that require far more knowledge than they have or could possibly have. This is especially astonishing on all matters having to do with Iran, a society in which deception flourishes, even more so regarding what we think we know about Iran. And more still when we are being informed by CIA, which has a very poor track record on Iran," which is a prologue to the strange saga of Shahram Amiri, the Iranian physicist who came to the United States in 2009 and returned to Tehran a bit more than a year later. He was executed a few days ago for espionage. His story was told in considerable, indeed astonishing, detail at the time of his return to Iran. And it has resurfaced now because there are apparent references to him in emails from top State Department officials to Secretary Hillary Clinton. The emails are in documents made public by State. They are not the result of hacking. We know about them because the Obama administration wants us and everyone else to know. The Obama administration has told us a remarkable amount about Mr. Amiri, and journalists have scratched their heads trying to explain his case, which was extensively discussed when he returned to Iran in 2010. U.S. officials told our reporters that Amini had freely chosen to go to Iran and then said he'd been very helpful to us. Here's the New York Times in 2010. And then he just repeats, they just go into detail and talk about who he is. And they said he had been an informant for the Central Intelligence Agency. This is reported in the New York Times. So Michael goes on to say, "The Times gave details of Amiri's information, which was said to include the location of Iran's covert nuclear research program. That all looks to me like a deliberate effort by the administration to get Mr. Amiri killed." Mr. Amiri killed. U.S. officials were officially telling the Iranian regime that Amiri was indeed a CIA agent. No surprise, then, that he was arrested when he went to Tehran, and no surprise that he was ultimately executed. Remember that Hillary's emails were released officially. During his captivity in Iran, American pastor Saeed Abedini met several Iranian scientists. "He told me that the scientists were treated far more brutally than other prisoners, that they did not receive medical treatment, that the regime clearly preferred that they die of natural causes rather than execute them. As recent events show, executing one of them stimulates press coverage of the regime's brutality. Amiri's case was different. They decided to execute him." All right, we're going to put this on our Facebook page because I just think this is published in Forbes, and it's titled, "Why Was Our Iranian Spy Killed by the Mullahs?" It's pretty frightening. Michael Ledeen is indeed a decades-long expert in Iran, and he'll be our guest again soon on this, by the way. And now this is another story filled with intrigue. You may or may not have heard that a young DNC staffer was killed, shot and killed here in Washington just on July the 8th. His name was Seth Conrad Rich. No one stole anything. It was just a murder. That's it. Nothing was taken, not even his watch. No money, nothing. And they can't figure out, why would anybody, there are robberies in D.C. all the time. There are gang shootings, but this is nothing like that. This is a fairly young 27-year-old Democratic National Committee staffer. Well, now it gets really interesting because yesterday WikiLeaks offered a $20,000 reward for information on the murder of this staffer, Seth Rich. And Julian Assange, in an interview, suggested to Dutch television that Seth Rich might have been the source for WikiLeaks, who exposed the DNC emails and was murdered. There are reports that he was on his way to the FBI. We don't know. That's a report, but we do know for a fact that Julian Assange went on television and hinted that Seth was their person on the inside. And, you know, you can say he could say that carelessly, but they're offering a $20,000 reward for anyone who knows about who might have killed Seth. So this is, you know, don't be surprised if real life is lost in the process of this. I think real life has already been lost. We are approaching very dangerous times. There's just no question about it. And so I want to close with kind of a bittersweet story. This is sent to me by a friend today who works in Italy often, is an American, but also does a lot of things in Italy. And this is from Italian Press. And here's what it says. Sometimes the loneliness melts into tears. Sometimes it's like a summer storm. It comes suddenly and overtakes one, say the Rome police in a statement. Four policemen cooked pasta for an elderly couple after their loneliness and television news caused them such distress that they were overheard crying. 84-year-old Jolet and 94-year-old Michelle told police that no one had visited them in months and they were desperately saddened by the state of the world. Yet in a rare break from fighting crime in one of Italy's best-known tourist mafia hotspots, four policemen called to their door, stopped to comfort them by cooking them some of the country's most famous exports, pasta and Parmesan. Their team post included the incident on Force's Facebook post, where it had been shared by more than 23,000 people, liked, loved, or cried over. The almost poetic description of the incident laid at the scene, out the scene in the moments before the policemen named Andrea, Alessandro, Ernesto, and Mirko were called out. It is not always an easy life, especially when the city is empty and neighbors are away on vacation. Sometimes the loneliness melts into tears. Sometimes it's like a summer storm. It comes suddenly and overtakes one. Well, this is a very poignant story, isn't it? But it is really the story of humanity. It is the story of the elderly being left alone. It's the story of the news that we all face every day that's becoming more and more inescapable. And certainly in Europe and Italy and Germany, it is becoming Switzerland this morning. Or Sweden, I guess it is. I read this morning terrible reports about things that are happening there. And it's oppressive to all of us. And yet the kindness that these policemen showed, the kindness that we can show each other, and the encouragement, blatantly, the message of Jesus about salvation, forgiveness of sins, and a hope that goes way beyond this world is what we must bring. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.